Vorher nachher mittendrin, Corona in Europa, heute mit Katrin Wölsteke, Journalistin aus Brüssel. Katrin Wölsteke ist Printjournalistin mit über 30 Jahren Erfahrung, mit engen Kontakten sowohl zur Hauptstadt als auch in andere Gebiete des Landes. Sie hat mehrere Bücher geschrieben, Dokumentarfilme gedreht, immer mit dem Schwerpunkt Disadvantaged Groups. Wir werden das Gespräch auf Englisch führen und dann mit Untertiteln veröffentlichen. Katrin, hello, good evening. I welcome you and I thank you very much that you are willing to tell us a little bit about the COVID-19 pandemic in Belgium. We had the numbers, which means that there were almost as much death or even more deaths in the little Belgium as in Germany. And I would like to ask you, what are the characteristics of this pandemia in Belgium?
Well, I think Belgium was one of the early countries to become part of the pandemic. Our first case was on the 4th of February, which was somebody, a business person who had come back from Wuhan, China. And our first casualty was on the 1st of March. And so by the 13th of March, we had a lockdown, which was not as strict as it was in France, in the sense that we didn't need a written permission to get out of the house. But it was rather strict in the sense that all schools were closed, shops were closed, and people were very much told to stay at home and to work from home and only to go out for necessities such as food or medicine. It was, of course, also not allowed to go and visit people at home. And I think the period during which we had the largest number of casualties was around mid-April. For example, by the 8th, 9th, 10th, that period was really a moment when daily we had briefings, government briefings every day at 11 o'clock. And we then ran into figures that were in the hundreds. And as you already mentioned, by now we are close to 10,000 fatalities. And in the last couple of weeks, actually since the end of May, we've seen the gradual unlocking of the country, where it has first been allowed to see four people, so to create a bubble which comprises of four people and then to stay within that bubble. That has now been expanded to 10 people. You are now also allowed to invite them to your homes. We're also allowed to sit in the park again, which has for a long time not been allowed and which led to many discussions, because of course if you live on the countryside and you have a big garden, it's very easy for the children to pass their time, whereas if you live in an apartment building with maybe just a terrace or no terrace whatsoever, then the park is the only place where children could go. So there was a big discussion about whether or not this actually was very negative for the socially most vulnerable people in society. And so as of last Monday, our borders have reopened. And so now gradually things are, getting back to normal, although it is absolutely compulsory to wear a facial mask when taking public transport, trains, buses, trams. Also in shops, it's very much encouraged, and I think most people do that. I think many people are also afraid of the whether or not we'll have a next wave. So restaurants have reopened, but with social distancing as its main measure. All concerts have been cancelled. The big festivals, we have quite a few big festivals during summer. They've all been cancelled. No festivals will take place before the 31st of August, which means they won't take place this year. So, and for the moment, virologists, which we see on TV every day. They're even more popular than the politicians. And so the virologists would have a 70% approval rate, whereas the acting prime minister of the country only has a 39% approval rate because, well, people do seem to have more confidence in the experts than they have in the politicians. But now people are a bit also thinking of what to do during the holidays, because of course the holiday season is coming up, and the advice here has very much been to spend the holidays in Europe and to go to places such as Germany, Holland, France, our neighboring countries.
Thank you very much. You might be aware that there was a lot of critics in Germany, the so-called Hygienedemonstrationen. How about the Belgium population? How did they perceive the measures of the government? Any critics?
Yes, there was a lot of criticism. I think there were two or maybe even three main points of criticism. The first point was that in the beginning, the communication about facial masks was very mixed and troubling, in the sense that actually we did not have enough facial masks, because of course we hadn't never seen a pandemic like this before. And so because the government was very much wary about running out of facial masks for doctors and all the caregiving personnel, they were actually saying, well, you could wear a mask, but only if you think you're ill. So they were not very much stimulating people to wear facial masks, which I think afterwards turned out to be a mistake. So that was one element. And the second one was that there were not enough tests. And it has actually taken until very recently before you could have a test. The idea was that if you fell ill, then you just stayed at home, you were confined at home, you took your temperature, and only if you became very severely ill were you allowed to go to the hospital. And of course, many people feared going to hospitals because they perceived them as places where COVID-19 infections were rampant, which of course was also the case. But so that meant that you had thousands of people who were confined at home, not even knowing whether they had the virus or not, and who actually had to sort of deal with it themselves until it became life-threatening. I mean, only in those situations could people really go to hospital. So that created a lot of anxiety. And I think most people would agree that had we had more tests available much earlier, we would also have had much better figures. Because at a certain point, it turned out that very often we didn't know, as we didn't have the tests, we didn't know how many people were infected. And for example, in all the old age homes, and that's in itself point number three, about 2/3 of the casualties occurred in homes for the old age. Often when they were trying to get the statistics, as they didn't have enough tests, as soon as there was one case who had been confirmed in hospital as a COVID-19 case, they said, well, then probably all the people ill in that specific home will all be COVID-19 patients, whereas actually they didn't know. So we got hugely inflated figures. And then Belgium, I mean, our political leaders started to realize that we seem to have more casualties and more figures, more infections than anyone else. So then they said, oh, we have to do something about the figures. So they started testing more on a bigger scale. Yes, did we do it in a very efficient way? No. So I think, and there's one other problem, and that is the political structure. As you know, Belgium is a complicated country where you have many ministers, many governments. And so actually in this pandemic, we saw that does not at all add to the efficiency. And if you have, which was the case, 9 ministers who were responsible for healthcare. And so it turned out that everyone was trying to secure material funds for his domain of responsibility. And collaboration wasn't very good. Also, when they rolled out the tracing, the whole tracing, not the app, but the manual tracing, it turned out that you had big overlaps and bad coordination between the federal government at the federal level and then the local level. So I think one of the big lessons Belgium is also taking and on which all political parties agree is that we really need to simplify our government so that we do not end up with 9 ministers for health, because that doesn't help.
In the preparation to our conversation, we mentioned that COVID-19 pandemic is a kind of magnifier of things which go wrong and which also can work, which go right. And you just mentioned the complicated political and governmental structure of Belgium. May I use this magnifier image now to draw our attention to another topic, and this is schooling. You mentioned that the country was again split in 2 parts regarding schooling. Could you maybe close up and wrap up our conversation with this topic?
Yes. Well, indeed, I would even say not even just 2, but even 3 different groups. In the sense, you could actually state that not all Belgian children had the same kind of education during the lockdown period. In the sense that we have a schooling system where you have a government, it's all funded by the government, but a government organized schooling system. And we have one that is organized by the Catholic, well, not the Catholic Church, but the Catholic organizations, which is not very fundamentally religious, but it does have its own curriculum. And so what we saw was that, if I just look at the Dutch speaking part of the country, we saw that most of the Catholic schools actually had a curriculum which hardly differed from the normal curriculum, which meant that if pupils had 7 hours of class normally, they still had 7 hours of class during the lockdown. If you look at the state schools, there the maximum hours was 3. So you could, as a teacher, only teach 3 hours, and you could still provide some tasks and that kind of thing, but no more than that. So how can you possibly explain that one group of children will have 7 hours and another will have 3 hours, and everyone is acting in the best interest of the children and their educational possibilities? And then on the other hand, so that is just within the Dutch-speaking community. If you then looked at the French-speaking community, there we very often saw that no education was provided at all in many schools, because there the reasoning was that as not every pupil has a computer, we cannot possibly start this distance learning, because some pupils will have much better circumstances than others, and education will actually make the gap, the education gap, the wealth gap grow. And so that here in Brussels, for example, really caused problems, in the sense that, of course, most of the adults still were working. So you had these adults who were working from home and who had 1 or 2 small children, who were in French education, in the French education system, and who didn't have any classes. So there were even cases where these people contacted the municipal government with the question of please organizing something for their children. And so you got the municipal government people who had to think of how to occupy, how to spend how to find an interesting way for young children to get through the day. And so, I mean, that also, how is it possible that in a small country like ours, we cannot agree on one measure, on one set of rules for everyone, which I think would be the fairest?
Thank you very much. May I come to the classical question at the end? Do you see anything positive in the corona pandemia and the reactions to it?
Yes, of course, there's a very negative element of the enormous economic losses. But I think the positive element has been that while we had seen in the months preceding the pandemic that our political leaders thought it impossible to do anything for the climate, to reduce traffic, to come up with measures so as to encourage people to work from home, our political leaders found themselves very much in a mood of inaction. And actually the pandemic showed that, first of all, it's very easy. Actually in the time of 1 week, millions of people were working from home and found that quite possible to do so. So we saw an enormous decrease, of course, in traffic, and we saw an enormous increase in bicycles and also in bicycle lanes. If you compare Brussels now to Brussels in 2019, you will see there's many, many more bicycle lanes. And there's also much more confidence with the employers, because of course the argument for the employers was, if we allow our employees to work from home, they will probably not work. We won't ever get the work done. And actually they've seen that the work is being done. And on the side of the employees, we see also that the fact that they do not have to commute to their workplace, which in many cases is Brussels, really increases their quality of life. If you do not have to spend 50 minutes every morning and probably over an hour in traffic jams every evening, you do get to do many more things which otherwise you're incapable of. So I think everybody has seen the enormous advantages of working from home, be it maybe not 100%, but a couple of days a week, for example. So I do think some of these temporary measures will lead to an increase on a longer term of working from home, and so a decrease in traffic jams and in also the acknowledgement of the importance of taking measures which are good for the climate, such as the decrease in traffic jams. So that is one point. And on the other hand, I do think also that in spite of the things we were unhappy about, the country has come together. I think for most people, we have seen that we are capable to confine ourselves. We are capable of following the rules. We did not have any really major problems in the sense that most people did as they were asked, and so that did in a way also reinforce our ideas of citizenship, and in that respect I do think it did improve the quality of our society.
Thank you very much, Katrin, for the insight, and yeah, I wish Belgium the best for the time to come.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.